Is this the best comeback in grassroots football history? Can Scotland end a 29-year tournament qualification wait? And how do we stop vandalism at one of Scotland's most significant sporting venues? Find out on this week's episode of the Youth Football Podcast. Welcome back to the Youth Football Podcast. We're back for episode 17. I'm your host, Adam Binney, joined as ever by my co-host, Robbie McDonald, and two very special guest reporters today, Josh McCafferty and Anya Diggins. Right, Josh, we'll start with you. Last time, I don't think the listeners will be able to see this, but last time I spoke to you, we didn't have as much of a beautiful mullet on the go. There's been some progress there, Josh. Talk us through it. Thinking behind them all, it's definitely making a comeback these days.
I know, it certainly is. My haircut before was pretty poor. It was just a short back and sides, so something a wee bit different, I thought. A bit like yourself with the cuttings. So I've just went for it, and it's, well, over a year now, or round about a year I've been doing it, so some decent progress along the way, definitely.
I was going to ask, was Jota the inspiration? But I think you've gone for more like the classic mullet, haven't you?
Yeah. I didn't really plan it. I just planned anything that I could get out of it because I didn't really know how my hair would go when it was long. But it's gone a bit curly at the back. But I was actually thinking this the other day. It's getting a bit out of hand now, so it might be getting trimmed soon. I'm not sure.
Oh, devastating.
I don't know.
Robbie, I would ask you about your trim, but I think you've had the same haircut since 2002.
Keep it simple. Keep it easy. Know my barber. My barber knows what I want. Get down to business. No, my barber.
You're Barbie. Right, let's cut the nonsense about the haircuts. See what I've done there? Cut the nonsense. That doesn't matter.
Ah, it's terrible.
You're supposed to laugh. Come on. Cue the laughter. Let's talk about the football, because tonight Scotland will play Northern Ireland. I think that game will have already taken place by the time this goes out, but currently going into it off the back of a 4-0 defeat to the Netherlands. Anya, it wasn't pretty on Friday, was it?
No, it wasn't. I don't really know what's happened to Scotland coming off such a good run to then go into friendlies and be defeated 4-0. I don't know if there's any positives they can take away from the game against Holland. I don't know if it was, if the players, I don't know if they're just tired. Obviously, it's been game after game in the leagues and stuff, so I don't know if it's been quite tiring for them. But hopefully they can pull something back against Northern Ireland.
Yeah, Josh, I think that's now six games without a victory for Steve Clarke's side. But I think Steve Clarke and the success of the Scotland teams as of late has, you know, given him that kind of cushion and allowance with the fans that it seems like these results for now are being accepted and tolerated, because we know, and I think we saw in that first half that Scotland played well. We've got good football players there and a good side. And I don't know if this is very un-Scottish of me, but I'm actually feeling quite confident going into the Euros. And I know that seems ridiculous off the back of a 4-0 defeat, but I think there were signs in that game that we can still compete at the top level and be a good side. And I wouldn't be surprised if tonight we totally demolish Northern Ireland.
Yeah, definitely. You look at the run of games we've had. It's like the last six games without a win. But you look at the opponents, England, Spain, France, and then obviously Holland the other night. So it's been some really tough games we've had. And it's not like we've put in performances that have been absolutely shocking. Like, we've actually been playing well. You look at the England game, unlucky not to take something for that. Spain away, we were robbed. And then the other night, like you were saying, Holland were just played brilliant for the first 45 minutes, 60 minutes. And then obviously they make the changes, and that kind of affects the way things went. But I think definitely I'd agree with you, pretty confident going into the tournament. You look at the three games upcoming before it, three friendlies are ones you're wanting to take three wins from. What is it, Northern Ireland, Gibraltar and Finland? That should be three victories and big victories.
Yeah,
three victories out of three. And that gives you a lot of confidence then if you have three wins on the bounce going into a tournament, no matter who you're playing. Of course, we're playing Germany. They seem to be clicking into gear at the minute. But if Scotland can get a run of wins together, I'm sure things will be a bit better, and I'm confident they can do that tonight, because Northern Ireland, you should be beating them by a couple.
Yeah, Robbie, I think I'm just looking at tonight's game, and I'm thinking Scotland versus Northern Ireland. In Scotland, those amazing players that have done ever so well will have the chance to pull on their jersey and sing the national anthem in a friendly match at home against Northern Ireland, representing their country in a sport they love. I was just wondering if there's like anyone on this podcast that's ever done that before.
Have you got a little shout out for yourself again, Adam?
Had to do it, mate. Any chance. In all seriousness, right, we need to ask the question of everyone, because there seems to be like there's three main areas in the Scotland team just now that everyone's talking about. One, up front, does Shankland play? Does Shankland not play? I think probably prior to the Holland game, everyone wanted him up front, and I thought he did okay other than hit the bar. Now maybe people are saying, oh, Adams or Dykes, but maybe a bit more mobile, a bit more of a presence up there. So that's one area. Another area is, how do you fit in Lewis Ferguson, who's one of the most informed midfielders in European football? And then the other area is the goalkeeping situation. We've of course got four goalkeepers in the squad. Which three do you take to the Euros? So quick fire, we'll go around all three of you. Tell me which three goalkeepers you're taking, your solution to fit Ferguson in the midfield, if at all, and Shankland up front, yes or no? Start with you, Robbie.
So for me, goalkeeper situation, I think I am taking Angus Gunn, Xander Clark, and Craig Gordon. I think that
I know. Snog, marry, avoid for those three.
Pardon?
Snog, marry, avoid for those three.
Behave yourself. I think that Craig Gordon's been the Scotland goalie for the past few years, and he's never really let us down at all. I know he's not really been able to get himself back in the Hearts squad, but that's only because Xander Clark's been so good for them. And I imagine possibly towards the end of the season, Craig Gordon will get a few more minutes in Edinburgh. And I think that the fact that Clark and Gordon have been pushing each other so hard is a good reason to take both of them, I would say. But I would probably expect Angus Gunn to still be the starting keeper come the Euros.
You got another two questions, Santa boy. Come on.
Oh, am I going all three? Well, yeah. So for the striker situation, I think that I would like to see Shankland have another go tonight and see if he can find that kind of form in front of goal that we know he's got. I think that it was a bad miss against Holland, but like every striker's got a bad miss in them. And I think the thing with Shankland is that 7, 8, 9 out of 10 attempts from that situation, he is going to score. And that's the type of player that you need in the Euros, when we're probably not going to get the amount of chances that we have done in other games when you're playing the likes of Germany. So you want the best striker possible, the best finisher possible up front. And then the Lewis Ferguson situation is just, it's a hard one. I just think he's a fantastic, fantastic footballer, and he's been like really, really good over in Italy. But I just think it's going to be a bench situation for him coming to Euros.
Oh, dear. Okay, Josh, what are you thinking?
Goalkeepers, I'm agreeing with Robbie. Obviously, Gordon, I think, speaks for himself. His past record, and he's probably not going to play a game if he goes, but just having that experience and that type of guy in the squad is critical. Obviously, Angus Gunn's your number one, and then it's probably a toss-up between Clark and Kelly, and it's a 50-50 decision. I'm taking Xander Clark personally, because I've seen Liam Kelly do a couple of blunders over the past season, maybe. Striker, it is tough. Obviously, Lauren Shankland started against the Netherlands. I thought he'd done pretty well. Just apart from hitting the bar, he'd done everything right, pressing well, giving the Dutch defence a lot of issues. So for me, I would start him tonight against Northern Ireland. I think it's another perfect fixture for him to go and maybe score a couple of goals. And then if he doesn't do well, then it's a situation where Dykes or Adams comes back into the team easily, because we know they've been over the course and they've done it before. My personal opinion is that Shankland, though, is the best natural striker, natural finisher Scotland have. And that's what we want for your number 9. Midfield situation is really tough because it's one of the strongest areas of the pitch. John McGinn, Scott McTominay, Carl McGregor, even Ryan Christie can do a job in there, as we've seen the other night. Billy Gilmore's a huge talent. And when you add someone like Lewis Ferguson into the mix, it's going to be tough to please everyone. I would start Lewis tonight in the game against Northern Ireland, but it's going to be a situation for me where come the summer, come the Euros, Does he get into Scotland's strongest starting 11? Probably not for me. You look at the midfielders that are probably going to play McGinn, McGregor, McTominay, and maybe Billy Gilmore, one or two others. I don't think he gets into the strongest midfield. But at the same time, when you're going to a tournament where you have, three games in the space of like 7-8 days, you're going to have to rotate the team. You're never going to have the same starting lineup throughout that whole period. So at one point or another, Ferguson's going to have to come in and do a job much like all of the squad. You need a solid 16, 17 players in there who are capable. And Ferguson is one of those. So for me, he starts tonight and gets a chance to impress. Because in fairness, we haven't really seen him in a Scotland jersey that much. Like, he's, as much as there's been a lot of hype about him in Italy, and rightly so, we've not had the chance to see him. So it'll be good to get that tonight if he gets the nod. And we'll just assess the situation come the summer. And I would say he's a bit part player. He comes off the bench. He maybe starts one or two of the games and see what happens.
I agree with all the keepers, to be honest. I think Gunn starts, like it's been said, a couple of silly mistakes, but nothing I'd say that's jeopardises his place in the team as first keeper. And Craig Gordon and Xander Clark, I mean, they're experienced. I think it's just a no-brainer to take all three of them. In terms of Lewis Ferguson, I agree. I think it's a really strong midfield, and I think there is going to be a struggle getting in there with the likes of McGinn and McTominay. But these are probably the games where it would be good to give Ferguson a run out. I think, as Josh said, it gives him a chance to show Steve what he can do. So maybe, yeah, best time to start him instead of trying him out in the Euros or whatever. Now would be a good time to give him the opportunity. But I think it's a struggle to get him in there with such a strong midfield. And in terms of Shankland, I think he's the obvious starter as well. He's not, again, a couple of blunders here and there, but overall, I mean, he's got, 20 goals in 30 matches or something in the league this season, so it's not as if his stats are really low. I think if you just keep giving him a chance, giving him the run out, then I think he'll be able to pull off a pretty solid number of goals in the Scotland team.
We're all going quite similar then. Yeah, I'd go Gunn, Clark, Gordon. That's an order of preference for a starting position as well. Liam Kelly's just unsubscribed to the podcast as we speak. Go Shankland for me, starts up front. I think, especially for a country like us, chances might be limited. And I think if you look at the past qualifying campaigns, we relied a lot on guys like McGinn and McTominay to score a lot of the goals. I think now is the first time we've got a proper informed striker scoring goals in the league since Lee Griffiths before he lost the head. So for me, Lauren Shankland starts up front. If he gets a chance, there's a good chance he's going to score it. And I know that sounds daft because he missed a big chance against Holland last Friday. But for me, Lauren Shankland has to lead the line up front. You got to go with your foreign players and the guys that are scoring goals, especially in those attacking positions. In midfield, I'd love to see Lewis Ferguson go in there. Perhaps do something similar to what we did on Friday, with have maybe like Gilmore and Ferguson sitting, and then have like McTominay and McGinn create almost like a box, and they play off Shankland. Kind of more of like a 3-4-3 rather than the kind of 3-5-2 we've played before.
So are you leaving Callum McGregor out then?
Yeah, for two reasons. One being that he hasn't been as great this season as he has been in previous seasons. Two being he's currently injured. I think Callum McGregor is a really, really important player and has been brilliant for Scotland over the years. But can you justify him playing based off current form over John McGinn, Aston Villa captain, Scott McTominay scoring regularly for Manchester United, Lewis Ferguson, captain of Bologna, who are going to make the Champions League for the first time in a long time, or Billy Gilmore in midfield every week for Brighton and Hove Albion, who are going steady again? I don't think you can then justify Callum McGregor, who's had couple of injuries and is out of form on a Celtic side that are nowhere near as good as what they used to be. I'm sure Josh won't agree with that, but in fact, Josh, I'll let you come in. How would you bat for McGregor in this situation?
I would agree with you. McGregor has not been at the level. It was last season under Postecoglou and under Rodgers, and that's just a result of the Celtic team taking a decline as a whole.
Yeah, and you know, and to be fair to him, I think all of the players have suffered in that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's true. The thing with him in Scotland is he's one of those players that he doesn't stand out as like Callum McGregor, 10 out of 10 performance for Scotland, right? He's always like a solid 7, 8 out of 10, nicely ticks over. And I get your argument, like you've got the Ferguson, Gilmore, McTominay, McGinn, who are all playing in the top 5 leagues. But I feel as though McGregor, just what he brings in terms of that overall stability, the leadership, the experience, I would start him in the games over a Ferguson or a Gilmore. And you've got to consider the fact that throughout the qualifying campaign where Scotland were at their best, there was consistency in terms of the lineup in the team, and McGregor was consistently in that and playing. And you want to potentially keep that rather than bringing in someone like Ferguson, who has rarely played for Scotland over the past couple of months. So I think it would be harsh to drop him, but listen, it's Steve Clarke's decision at the end of the day. I can see both sides of the argument. Like you're saying, the guys who are there are top quality, but overall, the fact we're having this argument in the first place is brilliant, because it's just a testament to the talent Scotland have within the team, and shows how things have improved from about 7-8 years ago. I seen something come up in my memories. It was like the 3-0 Kazakhstan away game, and now we're talking about having four midfielders who are Premier League Serie A quality. So it's brilliant how far we've come.
Yeah, I'll just one last thing on Scotland before we move on. I just have, like, looking at the squad in front of me, and I'm amazed at the people talk about consistency of selection with Steve Clarke. If you look at the number of caps that the players in this current Scotland squad have, it really is incredible. I mean, it's a real shame what's happened to Craig Gordon. He's sitting there at 74. Had it not been for his current injury and, you know, the previous one he had whilst he was at Sunderland, there is absolutely no doubt that that man would currently be Scotland's all-time cap holder, 100% would be. He's at 74 caps, still playing at 41, but he missed... How long is he out of the Scotland squad? For 5 years or something after that Sunderland injury? It took him quite a while to get back in. Then after his Celtic treated him quite poorly, I think, and replaced him with goalkeepers that weren't as good, other than the Fraser Foster loan move, that he then fell out of the Scotland team again, never made it quite back in, because David Marshall was playing at that time. Honestly, feel sorry for the guy. If you look, like, there's Andy Robertson, 68 caps. Kieran Tierney, who's only 26 and can't keep fit, 42 caps. Jack Hendry, 29 caps. Nathan Patterson, only 22 years old, 20 caps. 27-year-old Scott McTominay, likely to make his 50th cap. But that's incredible numbers for someone of his age. Ryan Christie, I believe he's in 47 caps now. Billy Gilmore, 25 caps. Billy Gilmore, 22 years old. It's incredible. Do you think there's anyone in this squad that could beat Kenny Dalglish's record? Is it 102?
102 is the record so far.
102 is the record. Anyone you think could beat that?
What's McGinn on?
McGinn's on 63.
What is he? 29?
29.
Yeah.
Although I think this might be from before the Holland game, so I think he'll be on 64.
Aaron Hickey, oh no, he's only on 6. Oh no, he's not on 6, he's on like...
Hickey's on 14.
14?
Yeah, McGregor 58.
A lot of these players could go up by about 10 caps by the time we win the World Cup.
Well, the thing is, there's more games now, isn't there? How many international
games? If you take into account like the Nations League and things like that, like back when Kenny Dalglish was playing, there was barely any games other than the actual World Cup and Euros themselves. Yeah.
Well, maybe someone like Billy Gilmore, who's already eclipsed 25 and he's only 22. You know, if he plays in every qualification campaign for the next 10 years, then he's going to get up there. The other one is the goal scoring one. Do you think McGinn could ever beat that?
What's he on now?
He's on He's on 18, the record's 30.
He'll beat that.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
John's got about, he's got about six years left in him, and 12 goals across, what'll that be like? 3-4 qualifying campaigns, maybe 2 tournaments, I think he could reach that.
Without a doubt, McGinn's going to score another 12 goals for Scotland.
I don't think he will, because he's... Well, I suppose what's happening...
He could do that by the end of the year, man.
Yeah, let us draw San Marino and he'll score about 5 in a game. That's the thing.
I just worry that as McGinn gets older, they'll move him further back the pitch. Mm. And, you know, he won't.
I'd move him further forward.
Target man. Hold up striker. Who's brilliant. Well, maybe. He might beat it. Maybe. Well, McTominay's getting his 50th cap tonight. I think he may be in with a shout as well. Players like McGinn and McTominay started their Scotland careers quite late. They weren't really in it as teenagers, like your likes of, you know, Gilmore and Patterson. Anyway, we're absolutely waffling. Robbie, there's been some Scotland youth teams in action in the past couple of weeks over the international break.
Has indeed. We've got the Scotland schools under 15s are currently playing in a round robin tournament with Ireland, Northern Ireland, and England, the Bob Docherty Cup. This year it's being held at Athlone Town, which is actually the oldest team in the League of Ireland. They started yesterday.
What year?
Pardon?
What year?
18 something.
Ah, oh, I thought you were gonna give us that there. Nah, you've got it there, Robbie.
1887. So 1 year before Josh's Celtic. They failed to defeat yesterday against Ireland. Obviously, the host country fell down 2-0 down, but they did well to fight back. They got a goal through May Cruft. May's from Dunblane High School, and she plays for Hamilton Accies as well as the Dunblane FC boys team. So she's obviously a good talent for her age.
Right, and then, let's stay on that topic. I wanted to talk about that. I think, especially when I was playing, you know, grassroots as a kid, I think everyone kind of had one or two girls in their league who were playing for boys teams as a kid. I didn't think it happened as much anymore. Interesting to get everyone's take on that, because you hear a lot of, you know, current professionals speak about how important it was for their development playing with the boys. I honestly didn't even know that that it was still happening. What do we think? Do we think that's something that should still be encouraged? For those girls to benefit? I absolutely think so.
Yeah, I don't see why there's any reason not. It's definitely something that should be happening. Before I kind of hung up my youth football boots, a year, 2 years ago, there was still girls playing for opposite teams. So it's good to see. And the talent to be there, so why shouldn't they be there? That's certainly something that should continue.
Absolutely. Anya?
I think, well, I was at the under-9s game at the weekend, and there was one girl in both teams on the pitch, and she was the exact same level as everybody else. Like, her skills and stuff were amazing, so I don't see the problem with them if they're playing at the same level as everyone else. I don't see the reason why they shouldn't be included in the boys teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important that there are girls teams to provide a safe space for girls to feel comfortable playing football and for them to excel within women's football. But I think for those that want to continue playing boys' football, I don't think they should be prevented from doing so. I think, and you hear a lot of like current professionals talk about how important that was for their own development growing up, and maybe it helps them physically and whatever. But I remember, big shout out, no idea if she'll watch this, but hopefully there's someone from Strathendrick, boys club listening to this. Strathendrick, a team based in Kippen out in Stirling way. No idea what her surname was, but there was a girl that played for Strathendrick at my age back in the day called Jenna, who was quality. Like, I don't know, probably like Pogba. Like tall, you know, like tall, middle of the park, use her body well, close control, rocket of a shot. Yeah, Jenna for Strathendrick was an absolute baller. I believe she played for Rangers at the same time as playing for Strathendrick, which isn't too far from Dunblane, actually, around that neck of the woods. But I think it's so important, and they should be encouraged if they want to play. Absolutely no issues with that at all.
I agree. I think that... I remember having a girl in the team that we played for to about second year of school, and then when we went into Inverness Youth League, she then wasn't allowed to play. I don't know if that's kind of like a national rule or if that's just
really
Inverness. But
yeah,
I
seem to remember as a kid there was some issues with like changing facilities or something, that there was a reason as to I honestly can't remember. But I'm sure I remember something similar, Robbie, where like I don't think girls allowed to play in our school team. We had in our year, top player, plays for Falkirk, played for Scotland, Celtic and Rangers at the time she was at school, and should have been in our school team but wasn't allowed to do so. And it's a shame because it would have made our side better. That might not be true, but I'm sure that's the reason she wasn't able to play, was because she was a girl.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the kind of ins and outs of it rules-wise now, but I do think, yeah, it's definitely a benefit. I think some girls definitely find it a benefit. They've definitely, especially back when we were kids, there was probably less women's football going on though. Whereas now, I think there's so many more girls' teams, and I think that's a benefit as well. Like, I think it is good that girls now have kind of the option of doing either or, and I think if you give the top level players the option of what they want to do, I think that's the best way forward.
Yeah, totally agree. Bit of a disappointing week for the 19s, Robbie. I looked at the squad and was like, oh, that's an absolute super team. Probably foolishly thought we could just beat Italy because we had so many players in that squad that play first team football in this country. But it hasn't been a good week.
Nah, I was disappointed against Italy. Fell 2-0 down again. But one of the players we did speak about last week, one of the first team players for Kilmarnock, David Watson, did manage to get a goal. So that kind of shows his talent. We obviously spoke that into existence, but the defence couldn't hold out. And a team like Italy, it's a much bigger country than Scotland. They've obviously got a very big footballing pedigree. So I wouldn't say there's any shame really in losing to Italy, but it doesn't make it any less disappointing when you go to a tournament with hopes and expectations.
Yeah, no shame in losing to Italy, but the 3-2 defeat to Georgia caught me by surprise.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think I'm not 100% clued up on how good Georgia have been. Obviously, they've done well to get to this stage in qualifying as well, but to open the scoring, Rory Wilson, Aston Villa's forward who signed from Rangers a couple of years ago, to take the lead early on, you're kind of hoping that that's going to be a platform to build on throughout the game, but allowing Georgia to realize right in the half time is disappointing.
Did you see that Fabrizio Romano was tweeting about Rory Wilson, about a new contract?
No, I did not. What was he saying?
Yeah, he's saying that supposedly he's getting in. Josh, did you see this?
Yeah.
Is he getting a new deal amid interest from other clubs or something?
Yeah, I think so. It was quite a big move actually when he went down initially, because like his goal record for the Rangers Academy was insane. Like something like, what was it, 60 goals or something this season? Something silly like that. And obviously doing well with Aston Villa down there. And there's a boy who went down to Aston Villa as well. I think he's 15, 16.
Aidan Borland,
and he was training with the first team last week or the week before that as well. So certainly a lot of talent down there when they take the youngsters. But for the 19s, I was actually half expecting to maybe get through. If you look at the squad, David Watson's incredible for Killy this season. Lennon Miller's another one. Bobby Wales doing well for Alloa. So they've got a lot of talent, and I would think maybe a couple of the boys go up to the 21s soon, the likes of Watson and Miller. And it's a bit disappointing to lose the first two games, but Czech Republic this afternoon, they've got a chance to end it on a high and go out well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was surprised that Miller and Watson weren't included in the 21 side. But of course, that's up to Scott Gemmell to choose his squad. Anyway, Josh, I believe you went to go and watch Scott Gemmell's sides play Kazakhstan 5 years on from the humiliation of the men's A squad against the Kazakhs.
Yeah, Scott played really well, actually. Scott Gemmell said it was some of the best attacking football he's seen the 21s play since he's been in charge. 4 goals, 3-0 up at half-time, cruising it. Really, really good performance. Kieran Bowie, a young player who was at Raith Rovers initially, then he moved down south to Fulham. He's on loan at Northampton Town this season. He played
like him, left foot. Good player.
So good. He's playing kind of off the right. Tommy Conway, a bit of a central striker, and he gave that Kazakhstan left-back nightmares, honestly. Spinning him inside out, quick feet, got an assist. He deserved a goal, so he did. Unfortunately, didn't get one. Tommy Conway scored a penalty. We've seen what he's been doing for Bristol City this campaign, even talk of a first call-up for him. So a really good, positive performance from Scotland. Played really, really well. Luis Fiorini also getting one of the goals. So it's actually some of, I would say, the best attacking football I've actually seen any Scotland side play. And I'm not just saying that because obviously you go to the men's game, it's been going since I was, what, 6, 7 years old. I'm not used to seeing Scotland play enticing, attacking, attractive football. But obviously 21's done that the other night. And fair play to Kazakhstan though, because 3-0 down at half-time, it could have easily went belly up and it could have easily ended up 7 or 8-0. I was saying at half-time to guys in the press box that this could be anything Scotland want it to be. But Kazakhstan get their goal. And the penalty they scored was brilliant. It was actually a Panenka from the striker, Jan Trufanov. So fair play to him. Forgot to mention Josh Doig's opener. Absolute peach of a goal. Gets the left-hand side and fires it into the top left corner. So brilliant strike for him. And he's doing really well. Spoke to him after the game and he was saying that there's a lot of similarities between kind of the way the first team works and the way the 21s work. But obviously for his position in the first team, there's just so much competition. You look at Andy Robertson, Kieran Tierney, Greg Taylor's getting called up. Aaron Hickey can play left back as well. So obviously I stand out for the 21s. Doig, captain in the side, and he's another one. Like Ferguson, who's doing really well out in Italy. Recently got his move to Sassuolo. So really good performance from Scotland here. And listen, qualification for this Euros next year is a real possibility. A Scotland 21s team haven't got there since 1996. So it would be a 29-year wait, if my maths is correct there. If Scotland do qualify for this, they're on the same level points as Spain. Spain are first, Scotland second. Spain do have a game in hand. And the next game for Scotland is against them on the 6th of September after they play a couple of friendlies next month. Spain are playing Belgium today at 6 o'clock. Belgium third, Spain first, all on the same points as Scotland. So that's a big, big game. So we'll keep an eye on later on tonight. But I'd love to see this Scotland team qualify. They certainly deserve it. So much talent within the team. The tournament's in Slovakia next summer, and even if they finish second, qualification is still a real possibility. So a lot of positives for the 21s at the minute. It's really great to see.
Yeah, that was great. That would be really good to see the 21s at that tournament next summer in Slovakia. Sam Elliott wrote up an article for the YFS website with Scott Gemmell's words post-match after speaking to him about the victory over Kazakhstan. So if you want to go and head over to the website, you can read Sam's work and Scott's words. Robbie, the goals were flying in with the Scotland women's under-17 7-0 win over North Macedonia.
Yeah, fantastic result to finish the campaign. They had a disappointing defeat to Poland before, and it was looking a bit more precarious on whether they would be able to get through the qualifier. But about like bouncing back with a 7-0 win is ridiculous, and especially Rangers 16-year-old Laura Berry scoring 5 goals in one match is a day she's not going to forget anytime soon.
Yeah, good to see her getting the earning the fruits of all her labour.
So bad. Your power gets worse and worse every episode, but
it's gone. Come on, that's worth a laugh at least. That's poor. Poor. Ah, well. Right, back on to the grassroots football. The reason
is that why you want the notes in so early so you can just think up stupid puns?
Just think of like terrible little puns, yeah. All right, fine. Doesn't matter. Senior Skills Trophy Cup Final. Robbie, I believe there's decent comeback for Aberdeen.
Absolute ridiculous comeback from the Aberdeen Secondary Schools. They were playing Fife yesterday in the Senior Trophy Final. They had a bit of a nightmare start, falling 4-0 behind. You can't really start worse than that. But second half goals from Alberts, Buckle, Mackay and McCormack took the game to a penalty shootout. And then Aberdeen just kept up that momentum and scored all 5 of their penalties, where Hopkinson managed to save the decisive one to give them the victory there.
Yeah, to be fair, I can sympathise with Fife. I was playing in a cup final once and we were 2-0 up and it was like the game was divided into quarters because it was like roasting hot day in the middle of summer, so they just had water breaks. So we're 2-0 up going into the last quarter and the other team are down to 10 men and we lose the game 3-2. So I can sympathise with Fife. I can sympathise with them because I mean,
how did that happen, Josh? Like,
I don't know. I was playing centre half as well, so we're not really.
We found the reason.
But the goalkeeper, our sub goalkeeper, was brought on at left back for the last 15 minutes, and we conceded 2 goals from that position. So, not to blame.
Why did you do that?
I don't know. He just wants
to get my medal or something.
To give him minutes in a cup final, and we bottled it. So Fife, if anyone from Fife is listening, unlucky lads. I can see where he's come from.
There you go. That's. I'm sure they'll be comforted by the support of serial loser.
I've not even got a footballing medal to my name except YFS Cup final last year is the only thing I've won. So
that was a sheer robbery.
Anya, I believe you had a chance to go to a game as well, under nines. This might be one of the youngest games we've covered in a long, long time. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, it was really good. I think, first of all, it was nice to actually do it in the sunshine. Since I joined YFS in September, all of my PTCs and interviews have came away not being able to feel my fingers. But so it was nice. It was nice and sunny. And it was good to actually be able to conduct an interview without chittering. But so it was really good football. I think it was... it was the W Academy against West of Scotland in the Glasgow District Youth Football League. Think under nines, you think it's just going to be a bit of a runabout, a bit of fun on a Sunday morning, but they took the game very seriously. And I think it was really good to see the talent that came from both these teams. So much determination, a lot. It was very... There was a lot of teamwork, I think, and that's like some of the difference that I've seen watching other games is they played as a team. There was no kind of course it was a standout individual performances, but just the
that's like impressive at that age as well, because I think you watch a lot of 8-year-olds and 7-year-olds and it's like they're all just attracted to the ball and it's all just heads down and dribble towards the goal. But by the sounds of it, it looks like, you know, these kids have played some proper stuff.
Yeah, it was proper link-up play, getting the ball up the park instead of just one kid taking it all the way or trying anyway. But some great goals as well. I think the standout was in the closing minutes. It was Joey for the West of Scotland. He just took his chances. He just seen the goal and took his shot. From yards out, and it just powered into the back of the net. So I think there's so much. It was really refreshing to see, like, there's a lot of talent coming up, and I have no doubt that these boys and Sophia, of course, as I said, being the only girl in the squad that day, I think they have the bright futures and where they're going to go. And I think the big takeaway from it was... I know we're going to talk about it, but the West of Scotland heading to the Holland Easter Open. I think being a Scot, and they're going to represent Scotland really well over there. I think the talent was just bursting from both sides. But going to West of Scotland can look at the game from Sunday, and I think they can be really confident with the squad they're going with. I think they'll really make an impact over there.
To one of the players post match as well.
Yeah. So. Gray, I spoke to Gray. He was really, really eager to talk to me. I think actually a lot of the boys were, which again is quite different for YFS. I think some of the older teams, they kind of shy away from the camera.
Oh, that's good. At that age, they're all just wanting to be on TV.
Yeah, Gray was just absolutely delighted to speak to me and speak about his performance as well. I think he's very confident. And like you said, Adam, I think having confidence at that age is really good. That's sort of... mentality you want your teams going into your players going into games. So yeah, he was eager to talk about his performance and what he thought he did well in the game, and I think he was delighted for his team as well, which was nice.
Yeah, Robbie, Anya touched on it, that there are a number of Scottish clubs heading over to Holland, as they do every year, for the Holland Easter Open. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, there's five Scottish clubs going over to Holland to compete in this tournament. The tournaments with clubs from all throughout Europe, run by Transworld Soccer, who YFS obviously have a very close partnership with. So the past few games, we've been sending some of our volunteer reporters out to speak with teams that are going to these tournaments. So we've caught up with Coach Jimmy of Spartans, Stephen again of Warwick Hall, who Max spoke to earlier, and also Anya with the coach from West of Scotland. So we can hear from them now.
So West of Scotland are going to the Holland Easter Open in a couple of weeks' time. So what are your hopes and ambitions for the tournament?
The hopes and ambitions. The hopes are that we've got 61 people going in total. So there's 18 players and the rest are made up of families. The hopes are that they all have a good time. They all enjoy it. The ambitions are, we've got three teams as such, but we've got two teams mixed now because of the number of boys that could go. The ambition are to do our best. That's it. Play good football, do our best. Play with respect and dignity, and that's the way the West of Scotland play.
And going into, there's going to be teams from all across Europe, so how does it feel to be represent Scotland after?
Brilliant. We're actually, there's an opening ceremony on the Friday, so we're going to bust it. The boys have got their kit, they're going to have the Scotland flag and everything, and it'll be really good. It'll be good. That's it.
Yeah, and how do you plan on putting a stamp, your own stamp on the tournament?
Your stamp is to play good football. We don't actually worry about boys making mistakes because it's a learning curve. Just hope the boys enjoy it and do their best, and that's it.
And is there anything that the opposition should expect from your style of play?
Well, we're actually playing in Teams England and Holland, so I would imagine against some of these teams we'll be lifting up, but we stick to our style of play. We play football. That's what we try and play. We encourage boys to play football, do the small ball skills, make mistakes, because you don't learn if you don't do it, but just, it'll be good. Expansive play and pressing the ball, and that's it.
And what's mid like in the camp for the boys?
Oh, brilliant. They're buzzing. I'm not sure if it's the boys or the parents are buzzing, but the boys are buzzing. They are buzzing. They're all kitted out. We're actually going in planes, boats and everything to get there. You get to Amsterdam, it's a 2-hour journey, but they're absolutely flying. And the wee bounce game, the two squads we have set up, the wee bounce game against St Caddox on Friday night, and they've done really well, so they're looking forward to it. Really looking forward to it. Okay. Yeah. Thanks very much.
Okay, great to hear from the three coaches there, all heading out to Holland. But now let's hear from a favourite of the podcast, YFS hero Callum Watt. He was out watching Spartans FC Youth versus Blackburn United Under-16s in the South East Region Youth Football Association Division 1. Callum, take it away, son.
That's it full time here at Ainslie Park, where the away side Blackburn United Under-16s have defeated Spartans Under-16s by 1-0 in the South East Region First Division. It was second v third and a very closely fought encounter, with both teams physical in the midfield and looking to get the ball down to play some very good football. Blackburn United scored what turned out to be the only goal of the game on 38 minutes when Scott Thompson expertly timed his run to stay onside and get on the end of Josh Sloan's through ball. He then dashed into the box before cutting it back to beat the defender and slotting low into the bottom corner. The second half was played in much the same way as the first, in being an end-to-end and physical encounter, but clear-cut chances were at a bit of a premium. There were some flashes of skill and pace from Ola Benson down the right for Spartans, and then Blackburn had a flurry of corners, which ultimately came to nothing. So it finished 1-0 to the away side, who now go just 1 point behind their hosts in the First Division, although they've got three games in hand, and the season is reaching its conclusion in the next few weeks. So they'll be hoping to catch Spartans and potentially look to take that top spot.
Okay, sounds like a fantastic game there. Second versus third, 1-0 away win for Blackburn, which pulls them within 1 point of Spartans. It's going to be tight at the top going into the end of the season. Spartans, of course, beating 3-2 in the reverse fixtures. So maybe they were feeling like there was a wee bit of revenge. That's going to certainly hot up towards the end of the season. Let's try and get some context on that match and the title race as a whole here. Is an interview with Coach Connor. And Callum also spoke to Chris and Jaden.
So I'm here with Coach Connor of Blackburn United under-16s. What was your thoughts on that game today against Spartans?
Really good game. Really good game. Spartans are a good side. They beat us 3-2 at home earlier in the season, so we knew it was going to be a right tough game. Both doing well in the league, both up there in that kind of top four. So just delighted to get a win, especially a 1-0. Thought the boys were absolutely superb, scored a really good goal, and Spartans threw everything against us in that second half, and I thought we stood up to it really well. So we're delighted with that performance. We've been on a great run, and it's just about keeping it going in a tough, tough league.
You touched on keeping it going there. That's you just 1 point behind Spartans. I think you've got maybe 3 games in hand. Are you hoping that you can keep going and overtake them eventually?
Aye, for sure. We're aiming to go as high up that league as we possibly can. We played in West Lothian last year and won the West Lothian League, and we knew it would be a tough challenge coming here because there's top teams and we get a right tough game every week. But with the run that we're on, we've got points on the board, we've got games in hand, we're going to have tough games, but you know, we fancy ourselves to finish as high as we possibly can. So we're looking to win every game.
And you touched on it there earlier. Closely fought 1-0 win with your goal. Very well taken goal. Watching the line. Is that the kind of play that Blackburn play most weeks?
It is. We try and play positive attacking football. That's what we really want for them. So we work a lot during the week on, you know, movement off the ball, always having options to pass. And it was great to see them performing a goal like that out there on the pitch, because like you said, really good build up into the middle of the pitch. Scott the striker makes a run and the ball goes down the outside and he finishes really coolly. So that's what we look for, that's what we want the boys to do, and I say again, credit to Spartans, and I think just about every team in the league, that's how they want to play. So it's great when two teams are coming up against each other, want to play out through the back, want to try and build through their midfield, and go and score good goals. Great to watch.
And just finally, obviously, we said you're 1 point behind Spartans, just ahead of you, and then a couple points more, and then it's KSQ Galaxy at the top of the league.
That's right.
Is a league championship within your sights? Do you think the boys could do it?
I think they could. Don't see why not. We've just been discussing it in there in the changing room. There's lots of football to be played. We still need to play teams that are round about us, Edinburgh City, Musselburgh, Bonnyrigg, all really good sides, all really tough games, but we still need to play all of them. They all need to play each other. So we just need to win as many games as we possibly can, and then you never know. I wouldn't rule it out.
Absolutely. Connor, thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thank you to Callum Watt, as well as Connor, Chris and Jaden, for speaking to us after Spartans versus Blackburn United under-16s. Okay, last podcast we spoke about Rangers' victory over Dundee United in the Scottish Youth Cup. They've since found out their opponents as Aberdeen cruise to a 7-2 victory over Ayr United, so that'll be the final. Rangers will take on Aberdeen. So if you want to hear all about the Aberdeen's 7-2 victory over Ayr United, head over to the YFS website and you can read Brendan Cooper's match report. Robbie, I believe you wanted to chat a little bit about the Cathkin Park fence just before we close up.
Yeah, well, of course, Cathkin Park is the kind of old home of Scottish football, the old Hampden Park. It's hosted.
Is that the second Hampden?
Yeah. So it hosted Scottish Cup finals. It's hosted Scotland England games throughout the kind of late 1800s. But there's been some controversial news that's just come out that they're planning to put up a fence around it. The Jimmy Johnson Academy, who kind of own that bit of ground now, leasing off the Glasgow Council, have been trying to maintain the park, but they've had a bit of trouble doing so. There's been lots of problems on the playing surface, lots of like dog mess, broken glass, barbecue burns. So they're thinking that the best way to deal with that now is to put up a fence with keep out signs. It's brought a bit of controversy. There's been a petition set up against the fence. Locals are quite annoyed about it, and especially the sports historian Jed O'Brien, who's like the creator of the Scottish Football Museum, he's firmly against the fence. He said that the difficulty is that they're doing it on possibly the most important heritage football site in the world, and they should be trying to save and protect and preserve the heritage of world football, because that's what this is. But I think the Jimmy Johnson Academy would come back at that and say it's just too hard for them to maintain when there's so much like kind of misusing of the facilities.
It's a really tough one, because I sympathise with both sides.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is like the romantic in me, though. I would just like it to remain as is and untouched. And I really feel for the Jimmy Johnson Academy, because I know they put a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of money into that facility. Obviously, they're wanting to, you know, play Youth Cup finals there on a top quality grass surface and all of the rest of it. I think for me, given like its importance to Scottish football, and I think if has anyone watched the Dougree Scott documentary recently that was on BBC? I think when you realise like how important Cathkin Park is and to not just Scottish football but to football as we know it, like modern day association football, like that's a World Heritage site. So I don't think there should be a fence, but I'll be interested to open the floor to debate because I do understand both sides.
I think it's a tough one, definitely, like you're saying. You can see both sides of the argument. Obviously, it's a historical place and you want to preserve it. If you're a local there, I don't know if there's any other parks nearby that you can go to or anything like that. But if there is significant damage, then is there a way to prevent that? Is it only going to get worse? There's two sides of the argument.
That's the most disappointing part for me.
Yeah, definitely.
That's like, happening in the first place because it is such a historic venue and the fact that there's clearly been signs of vandalism, that's really disappointing.
Yeah, definitely. Football's one of the biggest things in this country. It's the national sport, and the Scotland national team is something that unites the country. We'll see it this summer when the Euros take place, and we've seen it before. And people just going on and vandalising it is quite poor, not making the most of what is a magical place. For some people have grandfathers and great-grandfathers and things like that who've probably played in that pitch, scored big goals there, and it's just getting put to waste. Put it this way, let's just say in 40, 50 years' time, when we're all about 70 years old, and Hampden Park's been reduced to the ground because Scotland have, say, moved to Murrayfield or something, you wouldn't want to see Hampden Park being vandalised in the way that is, because the amount of memories you have there with your respective clubs, with the Scotland national team. So it's quite bad the way it's happening. Hopefully they can find a solution, whether it be putting up the fence, whether it be not. Hopefully something can come to fruition.
Robbie, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think I agree with you, Adam, that it's just, you don't want to see places like that fenced off to the public. Like, I've been to Cathkin Park. It's a lovely place. It's a lovely walk. I think that you want facilities like that open. You want places where boys can just go and play football and girls can just go and play football. But I think that, like, the Jimmy Johnson Academy president, Jim Simonette, he said that they've had to spend £200,000 since taking over the park in 2010. So, you know, 200 grand in 13, 14 years is a lot of money for an academy like that. A lot of money that they could be investing into, you know, better like equipment and better just like more towards actually developing players and having to deal with that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's hard. You can see both sides of the argument.
Anya?
I think we've spoken on the podcast before about closing facilities and stuff and how detrimental that can be to kids who want to go out there and play football. So it would be such a shame to have the fence put up around it and limit the access. But at the end of the day, it's the individuals, a few individuals that are ruining it for everyone. And like Robbie said, the amount of money that's going into fixing it, and it's just not a sustainable way just to be putting out that much money all the time. So I don't know what alternatives there could be to putting a fence up. It would be a shame for the locals, but I can understand where the Jimmy Johnson Academy are coming from. If it's going to be, it's a last resort. They have done everything they can. They've stretched all their finances to stop it from happening. And if this is the route they need to go down, then that's the route they need to go down, really.
Yeah. I know as much as I really wouldn't like to see that happen, because I think it's important, as like Robbie mentioned, people going and walk should be able to, you know, go and see Cathkin Park and see the old terrace and whatever. Ultimately, it's a football pitch in Jimmy Johnson Academy. It was a football pitch 100 years ago, and it's a football pitch now. And that's important to the people who played there then and played there now. So hopefully there is a solution to keep both parties happy in this, because I do feel like they both definitely have a key. So unfortunately, that is all we have for today. Thank you for joining us on episode 17 of the Youth Football Podcast. We look forward to all seeing you again in 2 weeks' time.